I'm Nuria Martinez-Keel.
And I'm Kayla Branch. You're listening to The Source.
Thanks for joining us as we discuss the Oklahomans' most impactful stories with the reporters who wrote them. This week, we're preparing you for Super Tuesday on March 3rd.
Oklahoma County residents can vote on expanding operation hours for liquor stores.
Campaign events for presidential hopefuls have engaged Oklahomans.
And how did Oklahoma join the Super Tuesday crowd anyway?
Kayla, you were reporting as Oklahoma County officials moved closer to putting a measure on the upcoming ballot to allow county residents to vote on potentially expanding the hours of service for liquor stores. How did that push even start?
Yeah, so in 2018, there were new liquor laws that were put in place. And so grocery stores could sell alcohol and wine and beer all days of the week. And liquor stores still had restrictions on them. They could not be open on Sundays. And so people were feeling that that was an unfair advantage to one certain type of distributor. And so the state legislature made it so that every single county has to hold an election to vote on whether or not liquor stores in that county can choose to be open on Sundays. And so Tulsa County, later last year, they voted to allow residents to choose on an upcoming ballot whether or not they wanted liquor stores to have expanded hours. And then the push started happening in Oklahoma County. And there were some folks who came to a couple different commissioners meetings, specifically Kathy Cummings, the mayor of the Village, which is a town in North Oklahoma City. In Oklahoma City is this other town called the Village. And so their mayor came and she was talking on behalf of local business owners, saying that they were really interested and they felt that they had been unfairly dealt with in terms of when they were allowed to have their shops open. And so commissioners mulled it over for several weeks. And at one point they were going to vote on it, but then they decided to defer so that they could get more input. But ultimately, and with a vote of 2-1, they decided to allow Oklahoma County residents to vote on expanding liquor store hours.
And it sounds like this is a measure that liquor store owners would be in support of. And I'm assuming Oklahoma County residents would be in support of this as well. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, I think overall most people are kind of having the attitude of, you know, they don't have to be open, so the business owner can choose to do whatever they want. It'll be easier on me if I, you know, decide I need to go to a liquor store on Sunday, and people being really interested in just having that freedom of choice. But there were some concerns. So one commissioner voted against it, Brian Mon. I mean, he basically has said that he feared, you know, there being more access to alcohol, that maybe we might see incidents with drunk driving increase, or that it could have a negative impact on addiction, which he said, you know, these are things that his family has dealt with and he has seen. And so he was a no vote for that reason. And then there were also some concerns that another commissioner, Kevin Calvey, was looking into, which is why they delayed the vote originally. And basically him saying, you know, would it have a negative impact on some liquor stores, you know, if some decide that they do want to staff on Sundays and have that full 7-day-a-week range, well, what does that mean for a store that, for whatever reason, feels it can't staff on Sundays? Now, is there, you know, an unfair advantage that we're putting in place here? So these were all questions that were discussed, but I think overall people are pretty in support of it.
Right, and my guess is that these were questions that probably came up when Oklahoma first explored the possibility of selling wine and High Point beer in grocery stores and gas stations too, and which can be open 5 days a week.
Right.
So I'm assuming that, you know, this has been an ongoing discussion, and frankly, Oklahoma has some of the strictest liquor laws in the country, so these have been discussions that have been going on for quite a long time. So at this point, though, what are we hearing from the general public on this? I mean, is the sentiment generally favorable? Are you expecting this to go through on March 3rd?
Yeah, I'm expecting that once Super Tuesday happens March 3rd, the next day we're gonna see a yes vote on allowing a liquor store to have those expanded hours. And then in the coming months, you'll probably start to see those transitions happen.
All right. Thank you, Kayla.
Yeah. We're joined by federal reporter Chris Castile to talk about the history of Oklahoma's participation in Super Tuesday, as well as how the current presidential races are shaping up. Chris, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You had a story earlier this week detailing the state's transition from caucusing to holding a presidential primary. And I don't know why, but it never had occurred to me that Oklahoma had been a state that did caucusing. So were you actually able to cover the caucuses before we transitioned over to presidential primaries?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't cover any of the caucuses. The last ones would have been in 1984, and I started covering politics about 2 years later.
Okay. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
So the entirety of your career has been under the primary system. So there are some states like Iowa, New Hampshire, who want to be the only state hosting their primary at a given time. Since 1988, though, Oklahoma has intentionally had its primary on Super Tuesday with a number of other states who are all voting on the same day. Is there a reason that our state prefers to be participating in kind of a larger voting block and having their primary on the same day as other states?
So Iowa and New Hampshire have a long history of being early states, and Iowa is actually a caucus state, and New Hampshire is a primary state. And that's the parties have agreed to that. It's just one of those things that every time that there's any noise in the, you know, in either party about changing that, there's just such resistance to it. And they've become these, you know, these kind of laboratories for, you know, candidates to, you know, test their campaigns with voters, really. And they're kind of easy. There's a lot of complaints, legitimate complaints about the lack of diversity in those states. They're almost all white. Mm-hmm. They're largely rural. There are no big cities and big cities in either of those states. But what you do get there is a very engaged electorate. I've been to both for presidential campaigns, and it's cheap to run there. You know, it's not like when you go to California or Texas and you have all of these different media markets, all of which are expensive. You know, I mean, you can travel around Iowa and stay. You know, it's like traveling to Eastern Europe. It's just a lot cheaper to go there than London. And so there's a vetting process that those states do. Now, to get back to Oklahoma's first primary and its decision to join a big Super Tuesday, the Democratic Party, especially, it felt like it kept the Southern Democrats, I should say, a big block of the Democratic Party, and the South was Democratic then. Up until the mid-90s, most of the states were majority Democratic. They felt like the Democrats kept nominating presidential candidates who were far too liberal and did not represent a broader spectrum of the Democratic Party, including the South, where they were a lot more conservative on social and fiscal issues. So the idea was hatched. And there was this group, not to get too deep in the weeds, but there was this group that Bill Clinton helped form when he was governor of Arkansas. And part of their strategy for shifting the National Democratic Party back more to the conservative part of the spectrum was to have this multi-state mega primary where they could elect, hopefully to them, a Southerner. And that became Al Gore, who was a senator from Tennessee. And it didn't quite work. And in fact, it was a spectacular failure because Michael Dukakis, who is the former governor of Massachusetts, everything that they didn't want, an Eastern liberal, was nominated president. Oklahoma has not always been part of a huge mega primary. I mean, it's varied through the year. Most of the time they have, how many has it been since 88 election years? And sometimes there's no real contest, you know? So it hasn't always worked like that. Here you have, you know, on the Democratic side, a very competitive primary where, you know, there's none on the Republican side. But, you know, there was an effort this time, I think, to have a bunch of states voting. And this one is really unusual in that you've got Texas and California involved in it. And you've got states like Virginia, bigger states are involved in this one than sometimes are involved. California used to be by itself or, you know, very few states with it. So a lot of delegates are at stake on March 3rd, a lot. And that's, I know some people get really confused by this. I hear this all the time at primaries or when we do stories about this. Why are they coming to this red state? It doesn't matter right now that it's a red state. That matters in the fall. They're not going to come here in the fall. It's a done deal. The Republican will win. But right now they're chasing delegates. And the Oklahoma Democratic Party, like every other state party, has delegates to offer.
Definitely. And I want to touch back on something that you mentioned at the beginning of your answer, just on diversity in states that have already had their voting.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I've heard through media coverage is talking about just particularly the caucuses, that it can be difficult for people to show up to come do something that's going to take multiple hours. And, you know, whether that's finding childcare, transportation, or leaving your job, depending on the type of flexibility that you have. And so what have we seen in terms of voter engagement in Oklahoma now that we are on the primary system? And I guess it doesn't really matter exactly what day that happens. But what do we see with voters coming out for presidential elections?
Well, obviously it's much higher. It's much, you know, much, much higher. I would say on your diversity question, too, I mean, that changes really quickly. It's going to change on Saturday. And it changed in Nevada, actually, this past Saturday. If you look at the exit polls, there was a lot of minority voting in that, you know, and that's been, I think, what a lot of the analysts have been looking at through in the exit polls is how the Latino vote went, you know, and how the minority vote went. Now you move to South Carolina, where the Democratic Party, you know, has a large percentage of African Americans. It's going to be really interesting to watch that. But, you know, in terms of caucus, very few states do them now. So it's not... You know, it's not even really, it's not that big of a deal, I don't think. I mean, Iowa, I think there'll be a ton of, there'll be a lot of pressure to change that system. But my guess is that 4 years from now, Iowa will be doing a caucus system. They'll just be doing it without that app.
Something that I've learned from past elections is that the primary candidates who win Oklahoma many times do not go on to become the presidential nominee for their party. And your story showed that even with Oklahoma's first primary in 88, Al Gore won the Oklahoma Democratic primary, like you said, but then he ended up losing the Democratic nomination to Michael Dukakis. So even in more recent elections, Democratic and Republican, we've seen the exact same thing with Bernie winning Oklahoma over Hillary in 2016. So it seems that Oklahomans appear to go a different way sometimes from the rest of the nation. And why do you think that is? And do you expect to see that happening again this year?
I don't exactly know every time why that was. You know, I mean, I think I explained why Al Gore would win here over Michael Dukakis. Mm-hmm. You know, and why Sanders won over Hillary, I think, has a lot to do with the state's dislike of the Clintons. But, you know, why Wesley Clark won, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a lot of times people vote against other candidates. And I think that may have been what happened in some of those cases. It was, you know, when you look at Wesley Clark, who I think was running from Arkansas then, you know, that was his claimed home state, against John Kerry, who wound up winning the nomination, was another Massachusetts liberal. So I don't think a lot of that's, you know, pro-Wesley Clark as much as it is probably John Kerry. John Kerry looked like he was, you know, at that point, I think when Oklahoma voted, it looked like it was going to be John Kerry was going to be the nominee. This time, you know, I mean, there are theories about why Hillary would beat Obama here, you know, even though they dislike the Clintons. I don't have any polling to show.
And this was in 08.
The first time Obama was elected president. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hillary won here. And then she loses when she's on her way, to, you know, when Sanders in 16, Hillary loses here when she's clearly on the way to being the nominee. So this time I think they'll go for Sanders again. You know, Bloomberg might sneak in there and get a few delegates, but I think it'll be Sanders again, and this time he probably will be the nominee. It looks like he's going to be the nominee. He's definitely the front runner at this point, so they will at least have voted for the front runner. You know, when you look at the candidates in the field now, Sanders is not the one that you would think Oklahomans would go for.
Right.
You know, he's not, you know, he's not in that lane. So I think it's inexplicable to some extent. I think, you know, here you may have, it's just who turns out. It's younger people, you know. And That's pretty much. I mean, if we had some kind of detailed polling done for just this district, the 5th district, the one we're sitting in right now, the congressional district, that showed kind of all the usual things about who Sanders' supporters were. At that time, you know, I contrasted him most with Biden, who sort of disappeared from this race. But Sanders just really well organized. He has just an absolute army of volunteers along with his paid people. You know, he hasn't spent on it hardly any money here, but he just has a really strong supporter base.
Right. Well, and one point that stuck out to me in your story was that a goal of the original supporters of switching over to the presidential primary system was that they wanted to bring more people to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. more presidential candidates. And that's something that we've definitely seen this year. Was it 5 people so far have come and held campaign events from the Democratic Party?
And Buttigieg is coming Monday before, yeah. So we'll have had all of the major ones except for Biden, probably.
Yep, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I know I was excited when we started to see announcements of, oh, this person's coming, because that is definitely not something that I've seen growing up here, that folks actually come and pay attention. And like you mentioned, that won't be the case necessarily in the fall, but it's still interesting to see and watch people have that engagement with the process.
Yeah, you know, in 88, Al Gore came here so many times, and I think I got access to him almost every time. I literally ran out of things to ask him. I remember we were sitting on the tarmac, I think it was in Muskogee, waiting for his plane, and I think we sat there for 5 minutes in silence, you know, because after all those visits, I mean, he really focused on Oklahoma, and you know, I got to spend time one-on-one with almost all of them. Jesse Jackson, I don't know if you guys know who Jesse Jackson is, mm-hmm. but just a fascinating figure, an electrifying speaker, you know, just probably still the best political speaker I've ever heard. But and here, what you need to do if you're a candidate is not just like keep having, you know, good showings where you finish third, you know, eventually you need to win a state, you know, you need to say you won somewhere. And that's why this Super Tuesday is going to clear out probably a few people. You know, there won't be many left standing after this. So they're, you know, they come here because they, especially Bloomberg, who has spent a ton of money here, millions, I think. He sees it as I see it, which is it's not a natural Bernie Sanders state. You know, there's a lane for him here. Spend enough money, I can maybe win a state. And that's really what Bloomberg needs big time coming into Super Tuesday, because he didn't engage in the early contest, didn't put his name on the ballot in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina. This is his day.
Now, let me be clear. My fellow Democrats in this race are all good people. If one of them wins the nomination, God forbid, I will support her or him. But this election, seriously, is just too important for our party to have the same kinds of divisions that we saw back in 2016. We just cannot do that again.
So they come here and they focus on states because they need to win states, not just delegates.
Right. And like Kayla just said, we've seen 5 Democratic candidates with Pete Buttigieg on the way who have held events in the metro area in Oklahoma City. And when a Democratic primary candidate comes to Oklahoma, what kind of voting base are they expecting to see as opposed to the voters they might encounter in Nevada, Iowa, or South Carolina?
I don't know. You know, last night at the Will Rogers Theater on Western here in Oklahoma City, there was a pretty diverse crowd for Klobuchar in terms of age and color.
What you should know is that only 3% of the delegates have been chosen. 3%. So this means that you in Oklahoma play a major role in making the decision.
Because I know
Oklahoma is more diverse than people think in terms of the racial demographics here.
Chris, what are you expecting to see on Super Tuesday? You mentioned that this might really change the picture of the Democratic race on March 4th, the day after Super Tuesday. What can you project just from your knowledge?
You know, I think a lot depends on South Carolina. I mean, not a lot, but it will be influenced by South Carolina to some extent. The next primaries are always influenced by the ones just previous to it. So I think if Sanders wins South Carolina, you can expect a really big Super Tuesday for Bernie Sanders. And I think you can anyway, probably. I think it's really crucial for Elizabeth Warren. It's really crucial for everybody probably but Bernie Sanders, because I think he's going to win states. And I've seen Warren in Virginia a lot, so I don't know if she thinks that she's got that this is a chance for her to win a state, but she's got to win something. I mean, she's been just surprised. Her results have been surprisingly weak in every state so far. So I guess what I expect to see is that, some candidates will disappoint and have to drop out, and Biden could be among them, which will be, surprised. Although Biden should... He should do well in South Carolina. I think he's going to get the endorsement of some important people there. It's a state, it's a party with a lot of African-American voters who, like him because of President Obama. So he could get a bump out of that and survive this. But, I mean, if Biden doesn't win some states, I think he's through. If Elizabeth Warren doesn't win more than one state, I think she's through. And then, Klobuchar and Buttigieg are right there.
Great.
All right, Kristen.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we appreciate you joining us.
But I think I offer a different choice and a different type of leadership.
I think that our job in this election is not just to win the presidency. I want to win big.
Our job is to revitalize American democracy.
The system we've got is just badly broken. And the best way we change it is we get out there and try.
To expand on the way presidential candidates have tried to sway Oklahoma voters is state government reporter Carmen Foreman. Carmen, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you have covered half of the presidential campaigns that have come to Oklahoma and held rallies. So let's just kind of go down the list. So you were with Bernie Sanders when he came, Elizabeth Warren, and Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah. Okay, so kind of three of the heavy hitters.
Yeah, what were those rallies like in terms of policy coverage and crowds? And
yeah, so very different. I would say that Elizabeth Warren's and Bernie's were very similar. They both spoke for a pretty extended period of time, let's say 45, 50 minutes, and they really outlined kind of their big policy proposals. For Bernie, that's Medicare for all. For Warren, that's some of the free college stuff. And she's talked about healthcare similar to Medicare for all and being supportive of that idea. And then Bloomberg was a little bit different because he kept things very short and sweet.
Okay.
And I remember that I was surprised at how little he talked because it had to have been less than 15 minutes. But it kind of worked for his crowd because he had an older audience in attendance than Bernie or Elizabeth Warren.
Looking forward, and what are kind of your predictions on which candidate in the Democratic primary, since that's going to be where most of these, choices come in that we're going to see people making. But just in terms of the crowds that you saw and the response, what do you think about who's going to do well in Oklahoma?
Yeah, so Bernie won in 2016. He won the primary in Oklahoma. And I still have a strong feeling that he's going to win this time around.
Oh, really?
I explained it to a friend the other day. Because I explained it like it's the Trump effect almost, because, people don't like to admit publicly that they voted for Trump or they didn't in this 2016 election. And I feel like Bernie is kind of having that moment right now where, people are growing to his message, but they realize he's still kind of out there and they maybe don't want to admit that he's their candidate of choice.
Okay.
But Mike Bloomberg drew an extremely large crowd. I was surprised at how large the crowd was for his Oklahoma City event. And he's He came back this week on Thursday, and there were like 1,100 people at his first event at the Oklahoma History Center, and he's been airing a bunch of ads here. Polling has showed him doing well. So I we're a very conservative state, and so I think people, Democrats here, might be more inclined to align with a moderate-type Democrat as opposed to a Bernie Sanders type. And then Elizabeth Warren, she's from here, but I honestly don't think she's going to win. And I think she's maybe not putting in the effort here to win. I mean, she did come once for a rally, but it's a super conservative state, and, you know, we only have 7 delegates, I think. So it's maybe not the top choice for Democrats to invest a lot of time and effort into Oklahoma.
Right. And that's why I was kind of surprised that we've seen so many of them come. We talked about this earlier on the episode, and that, you know, to have this many, was five or maybe 6 now, with Amy Klobuchar having come.
And Pete Buttigieg is coming on Monday.
Right. So
6, I think.
Yeah, so quite a few. And I don't remember there being a time where this many folks have come.
Right. And I mean, even when they were still in the race, we had Beto and then Cory Booker. So it's been a lot. And I think that just goes to show there's so many candidates, and they realize that they have to win as many states as possible because the votes are just going to be very divided.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 7 votes in Oklahoma might not seem like a lot, but it might be the difference between, you know, Bernie winning or Bloomberg winning or Elizabeth Warren winning or Pete Buttigieg winning.
Right. Well, and what have we seen on social media just from folks, you know, making comments about people coming and what they've said, and what have you seen there?
People made a lot of, I think there was some vitriol about Mike Bloomberg's visit. You know, people had some thoughts, certainly because his rally was unlike anything I've ever been to before, any political event. I mean, there was free food. They were going to
really?
They were giving away free T-shirts. I mean, it was clearly the mark of a candidate who has lots of money to spend. But you know, then Bernie Sanders tends to get the typical criticism that, you know, he's a socialist or he's too far left for Oklahoma or America. And again, I'm reiterating things that other people have said, not my own thoughts. But
right.
And then, you know, Elizabeth Warren has that stigma of the Native American ancestry. I don't know the best way to say this. Her claim to Native American heritage, saying she was a member of the Cherokee Nation. And, you know, when she kicked off her campaign and she said she took a DNA test, that kind of backfired, and we saw this week that a bunch of members of the Cherokee Nation and other tribal members signed a letter basically saying that they're still mad about that, and how, you know, it misconstrues how you can identify as a Native American. So
right. Well, and now pivot over to what's happening up at the state capitol. Have lawmakers on the state level said anything about the presidential races, or are they kind of keeping a low profile?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of them come out, you know, rah-rah in favor of certain candidates. There are a couple, like Representative Monroe Nichols is leading the Bloomberg campaign. But I can't think of anyone up here who's a Buttigieg supporter. I know that I've seen Representative Emily Virgin at the Elizabeth Warren event. She was also at the Mike Bloomberg event.
Okay.
And, you know, I asked her after the Mike Bloomberg event, you know, hey, are you a Bloomberg supporter? And she was like, oh, no, I'm not sure. I'm just a political nerd. I like to see these things. I like, if anything, she's, you know, feeling all of them out.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely very interesting, and I'm excited to see kind of what comes on this upcoming Tuesday, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
We wanted to put together this episode to help engage you in what is going to be a large upcoming election, and also on the ballot will be an option for Oklahoma City residents to vote on a 1/8-cent sales tax that would be dedicated for maintenance of Oklahoma City parks. And for more information there, we discussed that at length in our February 21st episode. And for more basic information on voting, polling locations, and more, visit the politics section on oklahoman.com.
thanks for joining us this week. You can read all these stories and more every day in The Oklahoman and at oklahoman.com. Check back next Friday for a new episode.